ground pass for your receptacle. The older 1950s and even into the 60s, two-wire homes, if you replace a two-wire receptacle, the current electrical code says you must replace it with a two-wire receptacle that is marked for replacement use only, or, a big or, you can use a ground fault circuit interrupter receptacle that has a ground pin, even though that ground pin is connected to nothing. The code basically decided that having a GFCI without a true ground path return is better than someone going to Home Depot and buying a three-wire receptacle and replacing that two-wire receptacle with no ground at all. It was a compromise that's allowed by the code. But you still have no ground path, I should say, no low impedance ground path back to the service panel to protect you in the case of a short circuit. If you really want a low impedance ground path, in that ground path box, you hire an electrician to run a grounding conductor back to the service panel. Expensive, but that's the only way you can do it.
All right. Let's assume now I'm willing to use the GFCI type of receptacle with three prongs coming out of it. And even if my metallic sheet doesn't have a low enough number of ohms to carry the full short circuit current and therefore trip the fuse or circuit breaker, but the GFCI only needs, let me pick a number, 50 milliamps flowing in the ground circuit in order to trip and to provide safety. So I think I can tolerate a rather large number of ohms in the metallic sheet if I have a properly wired GFCI. Is there any truth in what I just said, Steve? KD2HUC, K2RIW, I mean, KA2YHY, K2RIW, good, Steve.
Yes, there is. And the number is 5 milliamperes. That's all it takes. And you don't necessarily have to use a receptacle. You could replace the circuit breaker on that branch circuit with a GFCI circuit breaker. But the receptacles are what most people know. And if there's a 5 milliampere difference flowing to ground, if that ground path has a low enough impedance, and if that short circuit is to ground, yeah, that'll trip the GFCI. And that is part of the reasoning why the code allows you to replace a two-wire receptacle with a three-wire or three-pin GFCI. There's really no way to get around of getting that separate grounding conductor from that box all the way back. It's costly. It costs money to run another wire, but this is what the code thought would be a way to have a compromise. But if you really want that low impedance ground path back, you need a piece of copper from that box all the way back to the service panel.
Yeah, that gives you the ultimate protection. If on each one of the two-wire sockets, boxes, in my older house, I now put a three-wire receptacle, a three-wire connector, and each one of them is a GFCI. If I'm willing to pay the GFCI, and I hope it'll fit into each of the boxes, if I put a GFCI in each one of those places where I'm doing the conversion, am I reasonably safe, Steve, if the GFCI is properly wired? Over to you, Steve. YHY, K2RIW.
Well, that is exactly what the code thought was reasonable. And, are you reasonably safe? Yes, you're reasonably safe. But knowing that you probably don't have a low impedance ground path back, that is a consideration. Now, you said that if you were to replace the receptacles with a GFCI, you really only need to replace the one that is the furthest away from the service panel, because everything downstream will automatically have downstream GFCI protection. So on a particular branch circuit, you replace the two-wire receptacle that's the furthest away, and then those that are downstream, or rather upstream towards the service panel, will have GFCI protection. Of course, there's no problem in changing all of them to GFCIs so that you can plug in that three-wire plug. There's no problem there.
Okay, we have a little bit of confusion here about downstream and upstream. It is my guess I get the greatest safety by putting the GFCI in the circuit of a daisy chain. I put it in the box that's closest to the fuse panel, and then everything downstream is protected. If I do it the other way around, if I put it at the end of the daisy chain, that last socket is protected, but the ones closer to the fuse panel might not be protected. That's the way it sounds to me, but maybe I'm wrong. K-A-2-Y-H-Y, K-2-R-I-W.
Yeah, you get it in closest to the fuse panel. I may have misspoke. That is correct.
Okay, now it makes a little more sense. And some of us have got older houses that really need rewiring. We're tired of using that two-prong to three-prong adapter type thing, which is not a very safe way to go. It's just you're screwing it. You're establishing the safety ground by way of that little tab going under the screw. And that's again depending on the low number of ohms from your PX cable all the way back to the fuse panel. And so that's not a safe way to go. Anybody with any further questions or comments on all of the above? Because a number of us have got older houses that need rewiring. K2RIW listening.
N2EO. KD2FIU, I was trying to come back earlier.
Yes, I know. You're in the waiting list, George. Go ahead right now, George.
Yeah, the GFCI or what? Even if we have a lot of resistance, we're still talking about it's got to be a BX cable. And I have seen homes wired on Long Island in Nassau County with two-wire Romex. So all of that would not apply. You're going to have a three-wire Romex with the additional ground of the same gauge of wire wrapped in pulp, as I mentioned, or a BX that you can rely on. Because the original two-wire Romex runs that were put in don't fall into the category of what we've been talking about.
Yes, they do.
That's right. Yes, they do.
Yeah, YHY, I thought you did approach that one. So YHY, give us some words on a two-wire Romex house. Do they consider the GFI installation in that case? Do they consider that code YHY, K2RIW?
100% do.
Yes, they do. It's a two-wire system without the ground or the grounding conductor. And yes, you can still put the GFCI in there. Because the danger is when someone is being energized and current is flowing through their body to earth ground somewhere. Let's say through a cast iron radiator or through a metal faucet in the bathroom. Or some path from flat to ground, earth ground, standing on the ground even, the earth itself. That's where the GFCI will protect you. So having the metallic sheath of the old style BX or any type of metallic ground system certainly is a plus, but the code allows for the GFCI to replace the two-wire receptacle even in the case of two-wire non-metallic cable.
Yeah, I've got a couple of words on a question for you, Steve, on this one. Stand by.
KD2FIU.
Wait, you see with a comment.
What I'm guessing is going on here, Steve, is that the GFCI is carefully monitoring the balance of the current between the black and the white wire. If everything is hunky-dory, your 10-ampere load on the white wire results in a 10-ampere exact load on the black wire. And when there is an extraneous circuit like my body to Earth stealing some of that current from the white wire, I got it backwards, from the black wire. And so some of it's flowing through my body, and therefore there is a 10 milliampere imbalance between black and white wire. The GFCI senses that and trips, and that's where the protection is coming from, even though there is no real ground at that location. Am I close to the right attitude on this one? Is it carefully measuring the imbalance in current between the supply and return? K-H-U-I-H-Y, K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Not only close, but 100% accurate.
Okay, we've got EO, we got George and HUC in that order. And to EO, go ahead first.
Okay, that's where I started. Would it be better? I have two-wire Romex. That's it. It's too expensive to rewire for me. How about, how much is the cost of changing the circuit breakers to ones that have GF ground fault indicator in the breaker? Are they very expensive? I don't know. I have no idea. I don't think they make one that goes for a 200 amp circuit. You know, the main feed coming in. It would be nice, but I doubt it.
You may be too extreme on this one. I think Steve was telling us, YHY, that the individual GFCIs located at each individual socket, in the worst case, and maybe just the one that's closest to the infused panel, that gives you protection. You don't need a 200 ampere circuit back at the circuit at the fuse panel. You're doing this at the individual places where the two wire Romex wiring, so to speak, goes to your individual sockets. There you install the GFCIs, and maybe Steve will tell us an approximate price for that GFCI that I installed at that location. K-A-2-Y-H-Y, K-2-R-I-W. Go ahead, Steve.
1 second, standby.
See what I started, Dick?
All right, K-A-2-Y-H-Y, let me see if I have it. Rich, what you're referring to is what's commonly called whole house GFCI. And believe it or not, if you wanted to spend a lot of money, you can get one. The problem is, in order to protect one's life, the sensitivity has to be 5 milliamperes. And if you were to put one, a 5 milliampere device, on your 200 ampere circuit breaker that covers the entire house, it may be tripping all the time. Let's assume you have 20 branch circuits, and each branch circuit leaks or has a half a milliampere of standing leakage. That thing will never be able to be reset, which is why that's generally not used. Generally, in a whole house GFCI, you go up to like 30 or even 100 milliamperes. But then again, that may not be enough to save you for an electrocution, which is why we go down to the branch circuits. Individual circuit breakers in the branch, each 15 and 20 amp branch circuit is protected at 5 milliamperes so that the entire house is not accumulating on the mains. So you just have the accumulation of one branch circuit. Then again, you can put individual receptacles at 5 milliamperes. So it depends how you want to, you know, branch it out.
Good information, Steve. What's the approximate price today of a reasonable quality GFCI that I install right at the output circuit in each individual box? Over to you, Steve, K2RIW.
A receptacle GFCI of the 15 or 20 ampere type, generally maybe 12, 15, Under $20.
Good to hear it. And so, to do it right, $20 per socket to save your life, that's worth it. And particularly if you're going to live in that house for some number of years, even if not, you want to protect the person downrange. Okay, who else did we have on the list? George, did you want to make some further comments on all of the above? KD2FIU, K2RIW, and the TechNet?
Maybe if you want to complicate things more, we could talk about arc fault circuit interrupters.
Okay, give us some, that's a good one. Give us some words on that one, Steve.
Okay.
For many, many years, GFCIs have been required by the NEC and still are today. But now you have a new type of safety device called an arc fault circuit interrupter, which interrupts when it senses arcing activity on the line, either from line to neutral or from line to ground. And it's a whole lot more nebulous, but these devices are required by code. And in many places, both GFCI and AFCI are required on the same circuit. You can buy AFCI, GFCI circuit breakers. You can buy AFCI, GFCI receptacles.
Roughly how expensive, and do you recommend arc? Now, in the case of having aluminum wiring where I'm likely to get some arcing, there it's really required. If I've got copper wiring, is the arc still required by code, or is it just the belt and suspenders and I should do it if I'm smart? And the price of the arc detector, arc plus GFCI, rough numbers, KD2HUC, and standby, KA2YHY, K2RIW. Go ahead, Steve, number one.
Well, the AFCIs are required for new construction. If you have an older home, no, it's not required unless you change a receptacle that would normally be required to be protected by an AFCI. If you were to just change that receptacle in your living room or your basement or wherever it might be, and the new code says that should be AFCI protected, then you must replace it with something that has AFCI protection, whether it be a receptacle or a circuit breaker to protect that receptacle location. However, it's unenforceable. What electrical inspector is going to come into your house after you go buy a receptacle in Home Depot and change it? It's essentially an unenforceable code rule, but that is the code. So in your case, Dick, if you have aluminum wiring and you want to change to AFCI combination GFCI receptacles, there are such things out there. There are such circuit breakers out there, and you can certainly install them for your improved peace of mind.
M2EO.
All right, well, I need some more words on this one, Steve. What in my house demands that I have an AFCI on an older house if I do not have aluminum wiring? YHY, K2RIW.
Technically, only those branch circuits that if you were to build brand new today and require AFCI protection, and you needed to change a receptacle in your home that normally, if it was brand new built, would require AFCI, the code would require you to have AFCI protection on that replacement receptacle. It's unenforceable, but it is in the code.
What's not clear to me here, Steve, is that can I buy a receptacle that is AFCI only? Or when I buy AFCI, am I usually getting AFCI and GCI simultaneously? And the AFCI, is it twice the price of a GFCI? YHY, K2RIW.
You can go to any of the big box stores and buy a GFCI receptacle, everyone knows about those. There are some big box stores that have combination AFCI, GFCI receptacles. They look nearly identical, but they have both functions. Those products are indeed available that have both a function in the receptacle. Absolutely. And how much are they? I'm going to take a stab at more than double, maybe triple the price of the GFCI.
Okay. If I'm a little bit cheap and I'm not willing to spend twice or triple the price, I don't have aluminum wiring and I only buy the one function, GFCI, and I'm not getting AFCI, is that a moderately safe circuit, or am I really taking an extra chance here? The arcing, yeah, I guess the arcing could represent the beginning of a fire, couldn't it? So I'm taking some extra risk if I don't buy the double function. Correct me on this one, Steve. YHY-KQRIW.
Are we excluding aluminum wiring, taking that out?
Roger, we're excluding aluminum wiring. On aluminum wiring, if I got half a brain, I'm going to get both functions. But if I don't have aluminum wiring, and I only buy the one function, GFCI, am I taking much too much risk, or is that a moderate, is it an almost reasonable thing to do? Over to you, YHY.
You know, if I knew the answer to that question, Dick, I would move to Las Vegas and become independently wealthy.
Okay. If you were doing it, you've got an older house with two prongs and receptacles, and you yourself were doing it. I consider you a pretty conservative guy. I think you're telling me each one of your receptacles that you're doing this replacement from two prong to three prong, you would buy a dual function one and just bite the bullet and pay the money and hopefully it fits into the box. Am I correct on that one, Steve? Go ahead.
Oh, no question about it. Better to be safe than sorry. And you know, you make a very, very good point, and it's a subtle point, Dick, that a lot of people, don't consider until they get home and attempt to install one of these gadgets, and that is the box. Will it fit in the box? Let's remember that for the vast majority of homes built on Long Island, they were built builders that needed to build for a certain price, and they put the smallest volume boxes, the smallest volume that was required by code. And all of these wonderful new devices that we have, AFCIs and GFCIs, and lighting controls with passive infrared, and all of these wonderful things that connect to Alexa and this and that, they're all bigger than that cheap little 59-cent switch that was installed in the home when it was built that only needed a small little outlet box or wiring box. Now, fast forward to 2019, everybody wants to put in to that small little box these wonderful new gadgets that have all this new functionality, and they're bigger, and they might not fit. So then what do? Well, then you're in trouble. Then you need to call an electrician to put a bigger box in, or consider the very obscure box extender. There is a little gadget out there that will, it protrudes away from the face of the wall, into the living area by a good half an inch, but it gives you a little more volume to accommodate these larger devices.
This extender you just described, does the big box store sell that? It sounds like a very special item. How expensive? How do I get one of those? Does a big box store have it? Over to you, YHY-KQRIW.
They should. And if you can find them, probably way down at the floor level, you might find them. They are out there. They're available. And that's what they're basically built before. You know, in the very early days of GFCIs, Dick, the body of the device was fairly large, and that's when these products, these box extenders, came into being, because the early GFCIs were much bigger than the ones that you have now, and to fit into these old minimal size switch boxes that were installed in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you needed to get a little more volume, and that's what they were designed for. The big box stores should have them, but you will have to look for them.
I understand now that it sounds to me like the extender is something I add to the box, which gives me extra volume in there for the GFCI. It isn't that the GFCI has an extra plate out in front that is an extension. Am I correct on that one, Steve?
Well, no. You still need your ordinary cover plate after you install it, but the box extender it screws into the two screws into the box and sits flush on the surface of the wall, but protrudes out away from the wall a good half an inch. Now, a lot of interior decorators, let's call them housewives or our wives, don't like that because they're good dust collectors. But it's the only way to get volume without busting open the wall and putting a bigger box.
Now, that gives me extra volume in the Z-axis, the one going in and out of the wall. If the GFCI is too wide or too high, that doesn't fit into the old box, that extender might not solve my problem. The GFCI is larger in volume than what used to be there. Is that larger in volume only in the Z-axis, not in the X and Y? K-A-2-Y-H-Y, K-2-I-W, good, Steve.
Correct. And in the business, they call that depth. That's correct. Exactly correct. The depth. X and Y remain the same to the maximum dimensions, but the depth gives you another 3/8 to a half an inch with the box extender.
Oh, so therefore, the GFCI creates greater volume. The greater volume of the GFCI is only in the depth dimension. There's a standard for the X and the Y, where the GFCI is not bigger than the old. In other words, my small box will almost always fit a GFCI in X and Y, but it might not fit in depth, is what I think you're telling me. Over to you, Steve, K2IW.
Basically, that is correct, Dick, and it's primarily due to whether or not you have a pass-through circuit. In other words, that circuit going down and powering something else, where in the back of the box, you got two, three, or four big wire nuts that have to be compressed in the back of the box. And that's where the box extender gives you that little breathing space.
I'm getting the picture. Thank you. We're getting a lot smarter. Okay, I'm not quite sure who all wants to make some further comments. Please give me the list of people who want to make comments, and we'll pick you up.
N2EO, Dick.
Rich is one of them. Was there anyone else?
AC2KY.
Yes, KD2FIU. I was back there on the list, and... Okay.
Go ahead, George.
City codes are different. That's all I got to say. Very much different. The entire concept here of the wiring and the way to extend the box, everything, it's all different. So if I had any input, I'm sorry for bringing it in because the city codes are very, New York City codes are very different. KD2FIU.
100% correct. I'm talking Nassau and Suffolk County.
Thank you. Rich, N2EO, go ahead.
Okay, Zach. On a fixed income, what would be less expensive, to put individual ground floor indicators on each receptacle, or maybe would it be less expensive and maybe better to change the circuit breakers to ones that are ground fault protected?
QHUC with a comment.
Okay, we've got Warren and HUC. HUC, go ahead with, if you've got a comment on that subject. HUC, go ahead.
Just about to answer Richie's comment. You know, as an electrician, I wouldn't be messing around with the boxes. By the time you're done extending the boxes, which, by the way, you know, if you're married, you're going to end up with head trauma. You put a box extension on because the wives are going to hate the way that looks. Second, you know, if you pop the box and you put in an old work box, the old sheetrock is going to crack and you're going to have to spackle it and paint it. And by the time you're done with all this, it's a ton of money and a ton of work. You change the breaker and the whole circuit's protected and it's a done deal. A GFCI breaker runs about $50 at any one of the big box stores. And as a matter of fact, let me... to make installing them a little easier because the neutral tails that come out of the old circuit breakers are a mess and you have to put a bunch of splices in the panel. They've now come out with plug-on neutral panels, which have a third bus bar that allows the circuit breaker to plug on to the neutrals so that you don't have to have extra tails. So you can just wire the neutral to the breaker and the breaker's plugged onto the neutral as well as the line and you're good to go. I've installed them in my house. I've installed them in a few places, and they're actually quite nice, and they're ready-made for both AFCI and GFCI breakers when you choose to upgrade. KD2HUC, back to net.
Thank you, Steve. Good information. Warren, AC2KY, go right ahead with your comment, sir.
Yes, I had a question for YHY, actually. I had, and I've spoken to him over the years, he's very, very knowledgeable. So, Dick, can you ask him, I thought the original intent back in the day for the arc fault circuit interrupter was there's a tremendous elderly population, and over a period of time, extension cords get pushed up against sockets, you know, case in point, king size, queen size, twin beds, and they push up against these cords degrade over years and years and years. So my question is, the original intent for the arc fault circuit interrupter, wasn't it to prevent fires from these degraded extension cords?
My understanding is an arc fault detector detects the arc. Whether the arc is occurring in a frayed extension cord, a misused socket with something pressing up against it, or aluminum wiring, in any case where you have arcing, the arcing almost always represents an area of high temperature. High temperature at the arc means that you're subject to potential fire and burning down the house. I'm going to turn it over to YHY for upgrade on what I just speculated. KA2YHY, K2LIW, go ahead, Steve.
Okay, the person who raised the question, yes, that is exactly 100% correct as to the rationale that was used to change the original electrical code. The issue was extension cords and power supply cords that would get pinched behind a sofa, underneath a chair leg, and so forth. And that certainly is one type of arcing. But that's how it got into the code. But the evolution over time was to consider two types of electrical arcing. One which we call series arcing, which is in series with either the hot line or the neutral line. And the other one would be what we call parallel arcing, from the hot line to the neutral or from the hot line to the ground. So you have two types of arcing, series and parallel arcing. The current code requires what's called combination AFCI protection that takes care of both series arcing and parallel arcing. In the very early days, there were AFCIs that would just do series and then AFCIs that were just due parallel. But some time ago, the code was changed as the technology improved to look at both types, both the series and the parallel. And that's what's required presently.
Would I be safe to say, Steve, that any AFCI I buy today would handle both parallel and series, that I can no longer buy a single-function AFCI? Would I be correct in making that guess? Over to you, YHY.
For the most part, yes, as long as the AFCI has the word combination on it. That would mean both serial and parallel arcing. However, during the very early codes that required the early AFCIs, which were just parallel arcing, you may be able to buy replacement devices, which in those days were just circuit breakers, for the parallel arcing type. But predominantly what you're going to find is going to be the combination types. That's what's required presently by the code.
Thank you, Steve. Anyone want to make any further questions or comments on this subject of household wiring and AFCI, GFCI, and whatever circuits? Give me a call, letter, and name right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
N2EO, Dick.
Rich recognized. Was there another person? Okay, you got it, Rich. N2EO, K2RIW.
Thank you, Zick. A lot of information here. I'm sort of going into mental overload because there's a lot of information in a short period of time. So excuse me if I'm asking, but I'll be 70 in April. So I'm elderly. I guess I qualify there. I'm on a fixed income. What would be cost-effective consideration, cost-effective along with safety? That's my question. I guess it would be circuit breakers that have ground fault indicators. And I think, I'm not sure, somebody said the $50 a piece. My concern is not electrocution. I'm more worried about having a fire because the house is old. It does have copper wire, not aluminum. So, and two wire Romex. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, let me reword that question a little bit for Steve, YHY. If Rich N2EO switched over to circuit breakers that have the dual function of GFCI, AFCI, and arc suppression, arc detection, would that circuit breaker substitution be a reasonable investment? Or do you have to do something to make the dual reception?
Accommodate the new AFCI, GFCI circuit breakers. I kind of doubt that it will if it was built many years ago, but it may. So then the next step, if you don't want to have your service panel changed, would be to go with the receptacles, whether they be AFCI / GFCI combination receptacles. But then again, if the home is old, the boxes in the walls may not be big enough to accommodate these new products without the box extenders or changing the box out, as HUC mentioned before, which would require taking the old one out and plastering and painting and so forth. So basically, Rich, the simple answer is there's no cheap way to safety. If you want safety, you got to be able to pay for it. And unfortunately, in the United States, people don't like to pay for safety.
82 FIU.
George recognized. Steve, if my input box on the house will not accept the circuit breaker with GFCI, it's not accepting it because of physical size or wiring of that box. If it will not accept it, it will not accept it for what reason? YHY, K2IW.
The physical dimensions of the circuit breaker, Dick. Some are basically what they call one-inch breakers. Some are half-inch breakers. Then they have twins. There's all different sizes and shapes, and depending upon the stabs of the particular panel, each of the panel manufacturers have their own configuration, so that you can't put a square D into an Eaton panel or into a Murray panel. You have to stay with their particular breakers. And, you know, this is by design, unfortunately, but that's life. All these new breakers may not fit into the panel you have.
So the combination circuit breakers, are they most likely one-inch type and not the half-inch type? And therefore, I'd have to change my breaker panel. And to change my breaker panel to have an electrician do that for me, I think I'm into a number of hundreds of dollars of investment. Is that true, Steve?
That is correct, which is why you might, you know, if that's the case where you can't put the new circuit breaker into the old panel, then you want to go to the first outlet on the branch circuit and maybe go with the receptacle type product, as a compromise.
Would I be safe to say that the half-inch circuit breaker does not accommodate any of these multifunctions? The multifunction ones are almost all one-inch type circuit breaker. Is that a good guess?
That's an excellent guess.
Okay, George, KD2FIU, I know you wanted to make that comment. You got it, George.
And WS2N.
Paul also recognized. George, you got it.
Yeah, a lot of the circuit breakers we have in my area, they accommodate both the one-inch and half-inch. They actually have the footing to put them both in. And it depends on how you wire it from there, of course. But getting back to what Rich is doing, if he is going to move on, it may not be necessary to do any part of this work, depending on who the buyer is or what kind of buyer there is for the house. And I'm not clear on that as to whether he mentioned that. I thought he did. If he's preparing that because he wants to move on, I'll leave it up to the buyer, because some buyers might be just willing to wanting to rip it all out, so to say. Most of the panels that I have seen, going back to what Steve is saying, accommodate both the mini and the one-inch panels. Over to you, Steve.
Yeah, some do, some don't. I've seen them both ways. K-A-2-Y-H-Y. Dick, I've got to jump out of the car because I'm sitting here in the driveway, but if there's any questions, certainly forward them on to me at my call sign at ARRL.
YHY, I'm awful glad you signed it tonight. You gave us a lot of valuable information that we need. So you get the gold star tonight, Steve. Thank you very much. WS2N, K2IW. Go ahead, Paul.
I found a nice white one on in Home Depot for $26, and it's, 3.55 inches in depth, polarized,
It's got both protection. You know, it gives it dimensions, and there's 19 in stock out by me in South Setauket. It's $26.73, Dick. And I don't know, it doesn't sound, I think that would fit into a regular box. Back to you, Dick.
KD2FIU, please.
You said you got a nice white one. I presume you're talking about a circuit breaker. Was it the half-inch thick or the one-inch thick one, Paul? Go ahead.
No, this is the receptacle. I thought that's what you're looking for. Plug in. You want to put the put this into your receptacle. No, not down by the box. You know, this is you know, exactly what you're talking about. The AFCI with the GFCI dual function outlet. Put a nice white one, 125, 15 amp. Of course, Polaroid. Back to you.
And this nice white one, it has an extender that goes out into the room, or do you think it'll fit into an old-fashioned small box? Is that what you're saying, Paul? Go ahead.
Well, I know it would fit into my boxes, and, you know, I got the plastic box. I don't have one here to measure, but, I mean, it's 3.55, you know, call it 3.5 inches in depth. So that's it. Now you know, if you put that into Home Depot, it'll come up on your screen. I'm sure they have them in the other Home Depot as well. They have 19 over by me. Back to you.
And once again, what did you say the price was?
Let me go back. $26.73.
Beautiful. Thank you. Good info. KD2FIU, you got it, George.
2HU.
KD2FIU. Thank you, Dick. Sometimes the problem is going to be, let's say you want to change the box in the wall, and you're not going to be doing all the plaster work. You don't have to, because you can actually, with small different saws that they make, little hand saws, blade through this and cut out what you need to get that new box in. But the problem is, how deep is the wall? You can have boxes that were 1.5 inches deep, 1.75, 2.25, 2.5 inches deep. Can you fit it in the wall? What kind of wall is behind it? How deep is the wall itself? Does it have to be 2 inches? Has the wall been laminated with sheetrock, with screws coming in on the other side? Can you fit the box in there? Because you can do this without extensions of equipment outside of the box, but you got to look at it from a carpentry perspective. Can I fit this box in that wall? And with that carpentry perspective, you're going to say, do I have the little miniature saws to go in? And they're not power saws, they're hand saws, to go in there and actually cut this thing down, bring it in, and put that extended box in there. You can do it if you really look at it. But the real problem here would be, we got through the cable problems. We were talking about that. What kind of cables, what gauge, how many feeds in the cable, all of that. But if you want to look at the carpentry perspective, you don't build it out. You can build it in. But you can only build it in so far. KD2FIU.
Thank you, George. One more thing we've got to consider. Glad you brought it to our attention. KD2HUC, I think you wanted to say something. Go ahead, Steve.
Two things, Dick. One, you got to remember, back in the 50s and the 60s, these boxes, they didn't have ears or tabs on them. The nails go through the boxes, which cuts down what you can fit into the box. So even though the box might be deep enough, when you go to put the device in, you're going to hit the nails that hold the box on. Trust me, I know from experience. The other thing is, let me let it drop. If Rich is going to, with a little device, they plug it in and it tells you that the outlet is properly wired. It has a hot, has a ground, has a neutral, everything is wired correctly. A lot of unscrupulous people, typically non-licensed individuals, will bootstrap the receptacle to fake out these testers. And basically what that means is the receptacles that Rich has upgraded to 3-prong, they will extend a neutral conductor and tie it to the ground in order to fake out the testers. They kind of prey on, you know, unsuspecting homeowners so that they'll, oh, yeah, this will get it so you can sell the house and up. It's an extremely dangerous practice. It is against code, And I just want to warn Rich, if somebody happens to suggest it to him, he should run. KD2HUC, back to net.
M2EL.
Yeah, HUC, we need a couple more words than what you're saying. I'm installing a three-prong receptacle. And the so-called green wire, I presume if the box is grounded, and it's a metal box grounded by way of the Romex, and it's the right kind of Romex, I'm guessing that's a safe way to go. If I now do something that's quick and dirty, take that green wire of the receptacle and wire it to the white wire that came into the box, I presume that's cheating. And although your circuit tester on the outside will give a favorable-looking response, I'm really not safe. Is that, I think, what you're saying, Steve? KD2HUC, K2LIW?
100%, Dick. In the industry, it's known as bootstrapping or bootlegging the ground. And basically, it's just, you know, you tie a wire, a little piece of wire from the neutral on the side of the outlet up to the green grounding screw to fake out the tester.
And that's a no-no. And that's, would you safely say that is a completely unsafe way to go, that you're not really protected? Well, if it is a GFCI, aren't I still protected, even with that bootstrap wiring, improper wiring, if it's a GFCI? HUC, K2IW?
Maybe not, depending upon the path. You have to remember, now you're using the neutral for your ground. You can be electrocuted by a GFCI if you get caught between the hot and the neutral. It's not going to trip. It's not going to save you. So by tying the ground to the neutral, you're effectively giving it a path for the current to actually return on the neutral, and the GFCI won't see the differential in current between the hot and the neutral, and it's not going to open. The other problem is that if you have an issue in the house later on and the neutral becomes interrupted, then whatever is plugged into that three-prong outlet, the chassis is actually going to go hot, and you could be severely hurt if you touch that and another source of ground.
No matter what I'm using for protection, if my hands go from white to black, I look like a load as if I'm a light bulb. Nothing in the world is going to protect you from that. However, the more likely electrocution is if hot to human and human to something else, radiator, water pipe, or whatever. Now the current flowing on black and white is not balanced. The GFCI over 10 milliamps is going to see that imbalance and trip. Am I wrong on this one, Steve? HUC, K2IW?
In normal practice, yes, you're 100% right. The problem is that when that grounding conductor, you're assuming that the electricity is just going to run to earth. However, if it's running to something that is tied to neutral instead of earth, as in the case of a bootstrap, then it's actually the neutral that's carrying the fault current through your body, not some grounding conductor, because the grounding conductor doesn't exist. That's why bootstrapping is so dangerous, because now you're using the neutral to carry fault current that you would, you know, through your body. So it's not going, the GFCI is going to see it, the current on the neutral. That's why it's so dangerous.
Okay, let's go slow here. White wire is so-called neutral return. Black wire is hot. My body is touching black wire. The other part of my body is touching a water pipe. That's the kind of thing the GFCI can detect, no matter how it's even bootstrapped. There is an imbalance in current between white and black because I have created another circuit that goes back to earth that doesn't involve the bootstrap. There's an imbalance between black and white current, and GFCI is going to see that, I think. Am I wrong on that one? Over to you, HUC, K2RIW.
100% right on that, Dick. That's assuming that you're touching something else, a radiator or something. But the device that you plugged in, the third prong is connected to the chassis of that. If you plug in, say, a table saw that has a metal chassis, the metal chassis is tied to the grounding pin. If the grounding pin is only tied to neutral, then that chassis is tied to neutral. So any current flowing into that chassis is returning on the neutral. Does that make sense to you?
Now it does. I see it. And you've convinced me. Okay. Whereas with proper wiring, the current that flows into the green wire, into the separate grounding, going back to the fuse panel, GFCI is going to see that and trip. But what you just described, I see what we're going on here. So I better make sure I'm using double insulated tools, you know, a drill motor that's double insulated. And I guess you can't buy a double insulated circular saw. Is that true, Steve? Does anybody make a double insulated circular saw? I'm guessing the answer is no. HUC, K2IW.
That's the point. The point is that if the saw is ungrounded and you have a GFCI, if somehow the current is leaking, the GFCI, it's not going to return on the neutral, and the GFCI is going to see it and trip, no matter which path it takes. The only issue becomes if you bootleg the ground and now allow current that should be flowing on the ground to return via the neutral, and then the GFCI might not trip. And that's the issue. So the issue is not the saw. The issue is whether or not the ground has been bootlegged. And that's why I just wanted to post that warning to Rich that if somebody, you know, suggests it as a cheap alternative, you walk away from it. Because it violates code, it's not a safe practice, and it shouldn't be done.
Any socket that's on the outside of the house, I am guessing, should definitely, positively be a GFCI. And my socket on my outside of my old house is not a GFCI. The incident occurred where I wanted to use a drill motor outside connected to that circuit in order to drill a hole in something outside. And it happened to be a snowy day. And I'm standing in that snow about to pick up that drill motor and about to use it. And I refused to do it because I suddenly realized the metal case of the drill motor into my hand, through my body, through my feet, into the wet snow that's very well grounded, without a GFCI, I could easily kill myself, and I refused to do that job at that time. Was I right to have that fear, Steve? KD2HUC, K2IW?
Snow is not a great conductor. The problem is once it hits your body heat and it turns into water, then it's a problem. Yeah, I would probably venture to say, yeah, you made a good choice. And if you don't want to replace it, Dick, even though it is required by code, you can always protect yourself. They have little portable jobbies you can plug into it, and it offers GFCI protection. It's like a, I don't know, like a one-and-a-half-foot extension cord with a GFCI built into it, just for a little added safety. We require them on job sites, you know, to protect people. KD2HEC, back to net.
Okay. Here's something I wish existed, and maybe you can tell me it does exist. Can I buy an object that has a three-prong plug? It's got a plug on the back side. It's got a receptacle on the forward side. I push this thing into the receptacle, and it provides a GFCI function. Assuming there really is, I see the problem. Where's the grounding going to come from? If there's a way I can establish a proper ground wire to that object I'm describing, I guess is there something like that I can buy? Is there a safe way of using it? Over to you, Steve. K2IW.
It does exist. It absolutely does not require a grounding conductor.
Okay, so it is looking for an imbalance in current between white and black, and therefore it will trip, even though it doesn't have a ground. Very similar to what Steve YHY was talking about earlier. If you add a GFCI to a two-wire socket, you still are reasonably safe. So even outside the house, I think this thing would give me protection. So they do make an object like that. What does that object cost? What is it roughly? What is it called and what does it cost? HUC, RIW?
Called a portable GFCI. I think they're about $29. I'd be more than happy to cut you a link to one, Dick. Home Depot and Lowe's both carried them.
Fantastic. Good information. We've learned a lot tonight. Okay, we've been keeping Rich waiting an awful long period of time. Hope we didn't put you to sleep, Rich. Can we beat you GXN if you're still with us? K2IW, go ahead.
Hand them to Rio next.
Okay, maybe Rich, GXM is going. N2EO, go ahead.
Okay, Zick, we have some very smart heads.